This is a download of Farming Today from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to www.bbc.co.uk.
Good morning. In or out, the European Parliament is buzzing with referendum talk, but what do Britain's farmers think?
I prefer just grow my crops and try and make a living off the land, and subsidies to me give out a bad image for farmers.
I think it would destroy farming. It would. Farming wouldn't be the same ever again.
But first this morning, how easy is it for you to discover new ways of working? Can you find the right help and advice? And what about new machinery and gadgets? We all need up-to-date information and equipment to be efficient in business or in our working life. So this week we're looking at innovation in farming. Katrin Prager from the James Hutton Institute in Scotland is a social scientist, and she spent 3 years investigating collaboration between UK farmers. So how does she define farm innovation?
That's a difficult one. Well, farm innovation means that farmers stay on the top of their game, basically, by whenever they have a problem, identifying a solution for it, finding new technology, but also changing a practice, changing the timing of a practice, adopting a new breed maybe of cattle or a new rotation of grazing or a new seed variety, anything that helps them increase their productivity but also reduce their environmental impact, yeah, maybe have beneficial social consequences as well.
And can you tell us about the project you've been involved in?
There was two parts to the project. One was compiling an inventory that the European Commission was very interested in because they had no understanding of how different farm advisory systems were set up in each of the 27 EU member states. And the other part was in-depth case studies where we looked at three different topics. One was small-scale farmers and how they access advice. One was how you transpose new research into practice. And the third one was rural innovation networks or agricultural innovation networks.
And how are we doing in the UK? Are we getting it right?
That's another difficult one. The UK farmers are probably at the front end of picking up innovations. They're well connected. They have very good levy boards, different organizations, institutions that disperse information and some support in adopting innovations. But it really depends on how you would measure it. And if, you know, just taking on a new gadget, is that innovation? Then yes, that's a good thing. But if it's really reviewing and evaluating and saying, what do we need to improve? And what is it that we need to pick up to improve our practices? Is that innovation? And that will take longer. And that will also require learning on the farmer side.
Katrin Prager. Ash dieback has been devastating woodlands and hedgerows across the UK for more than 3 years, and it's not over yet. The Calara fungus has had a profound impact on large tracts of our countryside. But now the fight back has begun with a multi-million pound project to grow replacement trees, alternative species to the ash. BBC Look North environment correspondent Paul Murphy has been to a nursery to see the first green shoots of recovery.
Thousands of tiny leaves are soaking up sprinkled water in the morning sunlight in this field in Lincolnshire. Lines of birch, cherry, alder and oak in various stages of growth. These are the native hardwoods so closely associated with our countryside and just some of the replacement trees for the tens of thousands of ash that have been lost in recent years.
No one tree has replaced the demand and the need for ash. Ash dieback is still spreading. There are new cases of it being found just this year.
Robert Crowder runs Crowder's Nursery in Horncastle, one of three sites in the UK which are taking part in this scheme.
It's a problem that's going to go on for a number of years, but what's happening is woodland owners and managers are just increasing the numbers of all the other species to spread the risk of something like that happening again. So there's not one species that's replaced ash, it's increasing the numbers of all the other species.
When ash dieback hit this nursery, they needed to destroy more than a quarter of a million trees. It's now been found at more than 1,000 sites in the UK.
My name is John Tucker. I'm Director for Woodland Creation for the Woodland Trust. We've only just started to see the beginnings of the impact of ash dieback. It's only been in the country for probably 3 years now, but in places like Denmark, it's decimated 90% of the ash population there.
The Woodland Trust is investing £4.5 million in 4.5 million new trees. And mindful of what happened with ash dieback, every tree here is being grown to strict biosecurity measures.
Ash dieback was first identified in the UK in 2012, and one of the main sources for its entry into the country was on imported plant material from mainland Europe. So that really prompted us to take a long, hard look at how we did our tree procurement, our tree purchasing, and we decided that we needed to take much more control.
The hope is that these trees will eventually help woodlands across the UK to recover from a devastating disease.
Paul Murphy reporting on the fight against ash dieback. Now, we're all still getting to grips with the new political landscape after the election. And, of course, one of the big topics of conversation is that in-or-out referendum on EU membership. Where better to test the mood of Britain's farmers than an agricultural show? The BBC's Northern Ireland agriculture correspondent, Conor McCauley, has been hearing from farmers in County Antrim.
The Balmoral Show is a fixture in the Northern Ireland calendar. Over 3 days, 90,000 people visit the huge event, which showcases the farming and food industry. Prices and cash flow are a big focus, especially as some producers in Northern Ireland rely on European subsidies for up to 80% of their income. So talk of an in-out referendum on EU membership isn't one that the Agriculture Minister, Michelle O'Neill of Sinn Féin, is keen on.
I think it would be absolutely be detrimental, particularly in terms of trade, the opportunities that are there for us to trade with Europe. It's one of our biggest export markets. So I think that for the British government to pull out of Europe would be detrimental to both the farming community but also to the wider rural community.
£250 million flows from Europe to farmers and rural communities in Northern Ireland every year. That financial support is vital, but few farmers like the regulations that go with EU membership. So talk to them around the show ring and they're a bit torn about the referendum.
I prefer just grow my crops and try and make a living off the land, which I always did. And subsidies to me give out a bad image for farmers.
I think it would destroy farming. It would. Farming wouldn't be the same ever again. I would say you'd lose maybe 50% of the farms, you know. As a man says, you're doing well to get the single farm payment, but that's what little profit you have in farming.
It's renewable energy I'm into and recycling, and that's a big thing for me, recycling organic waste back to land.
And without the drivers from Europe, you think that would that just dry up?
No, I would, certainly would. Yeah. There's no real motivation.
It's all going to hinge on the deal the Prime Minister can get as part of the renegotiation process with Brussels. What everyone agrees on is that an early referendum is key. The one thing farmers don't need is political uncertainty to go with the existing price volatility.
Conor McCauley at the Balmoral Show in Northern Ireland. So what's the view from Brussels? Julie Girling is the Conservative MEP for the southwest of England and Gibraltar. She says the corridors of power in the European Parliament are buzzing with theories about Britain's referendum.
There was no other topic of discussion, and in fact, pretty hard to get down a corridor in a timely fashion because every single person is stopping to ask about the referendum. So some people are very frightened of it. They're very, very worried that UK might leave and what the effect on the overall European Union would be. Others are very interested and very excited about the idea that we might be getting some reforms which their own member states might be able to take advantage of.
And what about the talk back in the constituency, though, in the southwest of England?
In the constituency, very mixed. Business seemed to be very much in favour of staying in the EU. I think, generally, looking forward to the debate, my view being that we've got opportunities to sell in Europe. Of course they have opportunities to sell to us, but I know from my contact with British farming and farming here in the southwest that we're up for that. I mean, our quality is first rate.
And what about the dairy industry? Obviously, you represent a big dairy area. What are they saying to you, the dairy farmers?
Yeah, I think this is one area that we do have to think carefully about. Dairy farmers, given the conditions that they're in at the moment, are quite rightly very worried about influx of the market of European dairy products and the effect that that has on pricing. But we all know that that's cyclical. I meet dairy farmers who also talk about the opportunities, and they look at, for example, the Irish situation, where the Irish government have made it absolutely clear that they're going for a bigger market share across Europe. I think our dairy farmers in the southwest are looking to this new government to offer some similar sorts of support and encouragement.
What about some of those farmers struggling in the southwest? Would they still be able to survive without EU subsidy, for example?
I meet farmers all the time who tell me that their only profit equates to their subsidy. On the face of it, you'd have to say pretty difficult for a lot of farmers, clearly. And I'm not entirely sure that the UK, if it were separate, would be able to say, right, there is no agricultural subsidy. The world, it's a world market, it's a global market that we are trading in as part of Europe. We would be trading in that global market as a single entity. And that global market is distorted by subsidy, nowhere greater, for example, than in the States. So we would still be competing there, so there would still be the need for subsidies. So the UK government would have to look at that and devise a way of making sure that our farming was competitive on the world stage. So I don't think there'd be a huge difference in the long run.
And as a European politician, a Conservative politician, what's your gut feeling, in or out?
In a word, in.
Conservative MEP Julie Girling. That's it for today. I'm Sybil Ruscoe, and the producer in Bristol is Ruth Sanderson. Now let's go to the BBC Weather Centre for the Farming Today 5-day forecast.